to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Huntin' Hunterdon every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Huntin' Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental, NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Are you in business, not a member of the chamber? Come to the Hunterdon County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it.
There are 26 deceased. The total wounded include, the total number is 20. There are 6 in stable condition or have been released. There are 4 in serious condition and 10 that remain in critical condition.
Freeman Martin of the Texas Department of Safety with an update on the death toll in yesterday's shooting at a church in Sutherland Springs, Texas. Martin also believed they positively identified the shooter.
The suspect is Devin Patrick Kelly. He is 26-year-old white male. He was residing in New Braunfels, Texas. The cause and manner of the death in this with the shooter will be determined by pathologists during the autopsy.
Texas authorities are also saying there's a key piece of evidence from inside the church.
There is video recording from inside the church that has been secured, and we have viewed the video.
The services were often streamed online so they could be viewed on social media. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not from government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and for their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at LibertyHealthShare.org. That's LibertyHealthShare.org.
if Democrats gain a majority of the House in 2018, what are the chances that President Donald Trump could actually be impeached? Not very good, says House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. She joined CNN's State of the Union to talk about this option.
I believe that whatever we do, we have a responsibility, first and foremost, to unify the nation. Second of all, you can't go down any path without the facts and the law. If that's there, perhaps it will come out in these investigations.
As many people get ready to travel for the holidays, how would you like to be weighed before you take that flight? Well, it's happening overseas. Sharon Reed has a story.
Finnish airline Finnair is asking customers to step on the scales before walking into the cabin in an effort to collect data. The airliner says by weighing passengers, it's hoping to slash operating costs so it can better estimate fuel requirements. Getting on the scales is voluntary at Helsinki Airport. And so far, Finnair has only managed to weigh about 180 passengers.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Colonel Sanders from KFC here to talk about the good old days. Well, the good old days are still here in chicken form. Specifically, in KFC's original recipe fried chicken with 11 herbs and spices. Our delicious chicken is still hand-breaded and pressure-fried just like it was then. Get your fill with two pieces of my original recipe in a $5 fill-up with mashed potatoes, a biscuit, a cookie, and a drink at a KFC near you. KFC, it's still finger-licking good. At participating KFCs, prices may vary. Tax extra.
While in Tokyo today, President Trump said it's too soon to talk about gun control following yesterday's mass shooting in a Texas church. President Trump said the shooting was a result of the man's mental health problems. In other news, former Congressman Anthony Weiner surrendered himself to prison authorities today in Massachusetts. The disgraced New York Democrat was sentenced to 21 months in prison for sending sexually explicit messages to a 15-year-old girl.
Former DNC National Committee Chairwoman Donna Brazile's new book comes out tomorrow. In the book, we hear a lot about how the campaign last year in the presidential race was rigged for Hillary Clinton to get the nominee over Bernie Sanders. Brazile joined ABC's This Week to talk about people who are criticizing her for coming out right now.
For those who are telling me to shut up, they told Hillary that a couple of months ago. You know what I tell them? Go to hell. I'm going to tell my story.
It's still weeks before Thanksgiving, but one of America's top journalists, Trey Bodge, says it's never too early to start planning for your holiday shopping.
Now is actually the perfect time, because if you take your time and you shop slowly, look for deals along the way, it's a way to have a better grip on your cash flow.
Bodge also says gift cards will be one of the hot items to give this year, including Starbucks, food places, gas cards, etc. Bodge talks about why Starbucks is one of the companies that's really into gift cards once again.
Swagbucks just announced that they've given $200 million in cash and free gift cards to their consumers. So there's a lot of money out there for you.
And of course, shopping online continues to be hot as well. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. The weather this afternoon, showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm. It's supposed to be mostly cloudy with a high near 68, southwest winds 8 to 10 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation is 60% and new rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, except higher in the possible thunderstorms. Tonight, chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m., then it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 38. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour, but you might have gusts as high as 21 miles per hour. Tuesday, a slight chance of rain after 3 p.m., but it'll be partly sunny with a high near 50, north winds 5 to 7 miles per hour. Tuesday night, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low around 37, north winds around 6 miles per hour. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 52, north wind 6 to 8 miles an hour. Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 36. Thursday, partly sunny with a high near 54. And Thursday night, mostly cloudy, low around 37.
This is Chamber President Chris Phelan inviting you to the 29th Annual Business and Home Expo with our restaurant showcase. This wonderful event will happen on Thursday, November 9th at our new location, Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington from 2 to 7 p.m. If you're a business or organization and would like to participate, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or visit our website at huntertonchamber.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. I'm your host, Larry Cartwright, and we're very privileged today to have with us Dr. Susan Bauman, who's, palliative care? Mm-hmm. Did I say that right?
Yes,
oh,
you did.
Oh, boy, I stumbled right through that one. And Dr. Bauman, I always ask clients and people on the radio, because I find it very interesting how they got into their particular line of work. Some people tell me, oh, such and such happened when I was 10, and after that I always wanted to be a lawyer or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Others, where I fall in, four kids, a mortgage, car payments, insurance payments, taxes. Job came along and I took it. That was there for 20 years, you know. I was just curious, how did you wind up getting into doctoring and, you know, this line of work?
Well, as far as becoming a physician, I got interested in doing that when I was 21 years old, and my mother was very sick from breast cancer. And in those days, this was 40-some years ago, people didn't, not only did they not talk about death or dying or hospice, but they didn't even use the word cancer. So it was a very strange time, because we all knew how sick she was, but nobody had any conversations. And then finally she went into a coma and died. And I thought after that it was horrible that we never got to say goodbye or anything to each other. And so that's really got me interested in medicine in general. I went into family practice, and I still do family practice in Milford, New Jersey. But in addition to family practice, for the past 15 years or so, I've been the medical director for Hunterdon Hospice, and I started what's called a palliative care program at the medical center.
Okay, now you can explain what palliative care is.
Okay.
For people like me who are a little dense in that area.
Well, I'll take a step back and first mention hospice, because sometimes people get confused about those two words. I think everybody does know that hospice-type care is for people who are near the end of life, who are focusing on quality of life and comfort, and that's their sole focus. What palliative care does is take those concepts of quality of life and comfort and say, hey, you shouldn't have to wait till the very end to be comfortable. What we would like to do in palliative care is to help people have better quality of life while they're still fighting the disease, before they're terminally ill.
Okay.
So you could say that hospice, what hospice provides is 100% palliation. Palliate comes from a Latin word meaning to cloak or to cover over, to help somebody feel better, even if you can't fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And what palliative care does is help people feel better while they're still trying to fix the problem with their cancer specialist or their heart specialist or whatever other doctors are seeing.
It's ironic, because this past Saturday, hospice sponsored a vet's fair at the hospital.
Yes.
Which I had a table at, being a vet. And Kathleen Selig wanted me to, you know, have a table there because I'm involved, highly involved with NAMI.
Yes.
National Alliance on Mental Illness. So we had a table there.
With
and
us.
It was fun and funny because when you're saying hospice, they sponsored it, you know, and they were like, was at that, as soon as you walked in, they had their table there and they could, you know, mm-hmm. sign people up and so on and so forth. So,
well, first, let me thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And say that the in the hospice community, the consciousness has really been raised in the last few years about both about perhaps some of the special needs that veterans might have at the end of life, and also that we want to officially go on record for recognizing veterans' contributions. And so to that end, there are a lot of different extra services perhaps that that we provide veterans at the end of life. I think also trying to, well, our social workers in hospice ascertain whether the veteran is eligible for veterans' benefits, because a lot of mm-hmm. veterans are not accessing benefits they should be. But that's sort of how the hospice community got involved with veterans'
okay.
services, and I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, it's funny, but one of the volunteers for hospice was on the radio a year or two ago, and I happened to see him Saturday, and he's still volunteering. I said, "Hey, you're still around?" He says, "Yeah." So I says, "You're going to have to come back on the show." You
know? Yeah, he's great. He's great.
But I'm trying to remember his name, and I can't right now. Went out of my head. I don't know if it's Bob.
Maybe Bob.
Bob.
We'll
that's
just
it.
Say Bob.
The grayish hair.
Bob's yeah. a great guy.
Yeah. And, you know, and a vet and so on and so forth. So he was, you know, talking about both when he was on the show. Mm-hmm. So it was just kind of interesting, you know. And I met this woman who was a volunteer there also, and she was, you know, very nice also. And, mm-hmm. But, you know, it was just a lot. It was nice because there was a lot of things for veterans that they may not be aware of.
Right,
know?
Right.
So that was nice that there. But anyway, when, let's see, does a doctor have to recommend palliative care, or can a patient say they'd want it?
Well, it kind of depends on whether the person is currently in the hospital or whether they're not in the hospital. That may sound strange, but most hospitals, their rules are that there is one doctor who is in charge of the case, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
We call them the attending physician.
Right, right.
And the attending doctor, in when I was younger, we used to call that, should be the captain of the ship and organizing everything that's going on. Although my son says, get with it, Mom, and we really should call them project managers. But but whatever, there's one doctor in charge, and if that doctor thinks there should be a heart specialist called in, they have to order it, or a lung specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And so analogous to that, if they think palliative care is appropriate, they have to order it,
okay.
The consultation. Now, if the patient or the family says to that attending doctor, hey, I'd like to see someone from palliative care, of course they'll just go mm-hmm. ahead and write the order. Now, if somebody is an outpatient, we do have outpatient hours in the doctor's office building, people can self-refer. They can call up and say, boy, I've been struggling with a disease for a while, and I would like to avail myself of your services. And then we get in touch with their doctor just to coordinate
mm-hmm. right.
services.
Right. It's just, I don't know, I find it very interesting with all the illnesses, the cancer and, you know, heart disease and diabetics and, you know, all the whole nine yards, that I find it interesting that you don't have to wind up being on the deathbed to get, you know, help. I mean, you know.
Right.
Well, you, obviously you get help, I mean, because you're being right. treated for the disease. But, you know, you don't have to wind up being, you know, two breaths away from death to get, you know, a little more attention and, you know, such. And what are some of the things that palliative care does for the people?
Well, as I said before in kind of a vague way, palliative care is interested in quality of life and the comfort of the person. In other words, to reduce their suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important, I think, for all of us to remember, maybe it's obvious, that people can suffer for a lot of reasons. It could be a physical reason. They have nausea or pain or
right.
shortness of breath. But a lot of times, most times, when somebody has a chronic life-threatening illness, they also suffer, shall we say, psychologically or emotionally, and may be depressed or anxious. They may suffer socially. Most people who, especially if they're older and they've been sick for a long time, they don't want to be a burden on their family, or they may be socially isolated and not have a support system. And people can frequently suffer spiritually. Sometimes it may be related to their religious beliefs. They're wondering why God did this to them, or they're feeling guilty. But one does not have to subscribe to religious belief to suffer spiritually. You may, especially, I think, with younger patients, there may be this question of why did this happen to me and what did my mm-hmm. life mean if it's going to end at such a young age. And so a palliative care team, the same as a hospice team, is multidisciplinary. The physician or nurse practitioner is just one component looking at the physical. But we have social workers, chaplains, and others who, so that we can sort of look at all the dimensions of suffering. Because you could take away or try to take away somebody's what seems to be physical pain, but if what's really part of that is they may be feeling guilty about something they did in the past, no amount of painkiller you give them is going to take away that pain.
Right, right, because that's more mental than any.
Right,
you know.
Right.
And do you have to have a terminal illness to be a candidate for hospice?
For hospice, you do. And just to distinguish, again, between the two, palliative care services can be utilized at any time in a serious illness.
Okay.
Chronic illness. Hospice services...
But it doesn't have to be a terminal illness?
It does not have to be in the terminal phase.
Okay.
But it generally has to be something that is going to continue with the patient,
mm-hmm.
not get better.
Right.
Hospice services are defined as being available to people who the doctor thinks have roughly about 6 months to live. Unfortunately, a lot of people think hospice services are just for the last couple days or the last week, and they wait too late, and they really would have benefited from hospice services earlier. And something I think is interesting, it's that a lot of people, when they are on hospice, really do so much better that they're still alive in 6 months. Well,
right.
We don't throw them off just for that reason. So,
and as we spoke about, you know, volunteers, what do they do for hospice?
The hospice volunteers can do all sorts of things. I should say that hospice volunteers go through a rigorous training program, learning not only what hospice is, but what the different members of the multidisciplinary team do. And they can do any number of things. Sometimes they're just sort of in the role of a friendly visitor
okay.
who gets to know the patient.
Right.
Frequently, they can relieve the caregiver. When someone is on hospice, they're generally in their own home.
Mm-hmm.
Hospice does not put a professional caregiver in the house. So family members are still there. Mm-hmm. And so a volunteer might come and sit with the patient so the family member can go shopping or get their hair done or go have lunch with friends or something like that. And another thing that volunteers frequently do is what we call legacy work. Some people, when they're nearing the end of life, want to write letters or make videos for their mm-hmm. children or grandchildren or record their old war stories.
Right.
Collect their recipes for the family, and volunteers can help with all those things. In fact, more than a couple years ago, there was a lady, I believe she was in her 90s, who was on hospice, and the one thing she wanted to do in life was fly in a small plane, and the hospice volunteers arranged that for her so she could have her wish.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very
you
awesome.
Know, really.
Very awesome.
I can understand wanting to give the caretaker a break because that can be very
exhausting.
For lack of a better word. Yeah, it can be very exhausting. And, you know, both mentally and physically. And so giving them a break for an hour or two is, you know, like you said, they go shopping or they can mm-hmm. go for coffee or whatever, get their hair done, whatever. But they're not there, you know. So it's like they're away from the situation for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that is good, you know. It's just that, you know, a lot of times we just went through a loss of a real good friend of my wife's. And, you know, I knew her for quite a while, too. I knew her from high school. But my wife knew her since she was like 3 years old. They lived, you know, down the street from each other, you know. And she suffered the last almost 10 years with cancer. And it would be, she'd be very good at one point, you know, after going through chemo and everything, and she'd be fine, you know, and she'd be fine for a year or two, and all of a sudden back again, you know. And this last time, it just, you know, was too much, and it just, you know. But I can understand how, you know, somebody like her husband, you know, it's very tough. It's very difficult, you know. So I can understand why, you know, people need a break, you know.
Yes, yeah, and usually, especially, say, well, whether it's a husband and wife or a parent and an adult child.
Right,
either
right.
way, it's each person usually is trying to put on a good face for the other person. And so it's nice if separately they can talk to someone and kind of let their hair down, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
about the difficulties.
It is. It's very nice because, you know, they can relax a little bit, you know. And,
right.
You know. We have to take a quick break. This is the 100 Medical Center's Hour, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. So hang in there.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Welcome back to the Hunterdon Medical Center's Hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged today to have with us Dr. Susan Bauman, who's with palliative care. And we were talking about the difference between palliative care and hospice. And during the break, you had mentioned about some of the things that hospice does, or, you know, would you like to talk about that?
Yes, I think it's important to know all the services that hospice in particular provides. As I mentioned earlier, I think a lot of people have the misconception not only that that hospice is for the last few days or hours of life, but also that the only thing that happens is maybe you're given a lot of morphine and that's that, which couldn't be farther from the truth. Not only is it a service for people as long or even longer than the last 6 months of life, but it is defined as a Medicare benefit, and with other insurances, it's usually covered also, but Medicare defines it as a benefit so that you get a whole bundle of services and do not have to pay anything out of pocket. And most of our patients are Medicare beneficiaries, so I think this is really a key point. And what is that bundle of services? Well, first of all, there are nurses who come to visit. There'll be one primary nurse. And the nurses come up with the overall care plan, so if you are very stable in terms of physical symptoms, it might just be once a week. But if somebody is having new unstable symptoms, they might come several times in the day. And the other thing is there is a nurse on call 24/7. And as I say to some people, I think this is kind of worth the price of admission, because a lot of people, when they have serious illness, if they get a new symptom in the middle of the night, new pain or new shortness of breath, you know, if you call your doctor's office, they're going to say go to the emergency room.
Right.
And people generally, if they're focusing on comfort, don't want to go to the emergency room. Well, when you're on hospice, you call their answering service. They have a nurse who calls you immediately and then comes to the house. And so that really reduces patient anxiety. There's social workers to help with coordinate benefits or to do counseling, home health aides to help with personal care. We already talked a lot about the volunteers. Hospice also covers all what we call durable medical equipment, hospital bed, oxygen, commode, and all medication that's related to that terminal illness. And they don't stop the other medications if they're necessary for symptom management. If somebody has a heart condition, they need all those heart medicines to be comfortable.
Right.
So you still keep your same medicines that way, and you keep your own physician. Your physician is still the one who's in charge. So it's really great that way, that it is what I call kind of a package deal.
Right. The volunteers, I would think that there's some kind of a bond that they develop with the patient.
Oh, very much so.
And to me, it would be very difficult when that person passes on, you know, for the volunteer, you know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think it is. And in fact, I'm glad you mentioned that, because in addition to all those other services that hospice provides, they follow up the family for a full year after the death of their loved one in bereavement support. And on a yearly basis, the first Sunday in November, so it happened yesterday, there is a memorial service for all the people who died on hospice care for the prior year. And it's held at the Flemington Presbyterian Church. It's non-multi-denominational,
yeah, right.
So it's not tied to any one religion. And many, many of the families of those we served that past year come. Many of the volunteers come. Most of the hospice staff comes. And it really is sort of very helpful, I think, in that healing process after the death.
Yeah, I think it would be, yes.
And in fact, many of our volunteers, maybe most of our volunteers, have had a family member die on hospice, and that's how they get to know how great hospice is. And then they want to do something for other people.
Yeah, I think you have to be a special type of person, though. I don't know that I could do that.
Well,
I do volunteer at the hospital, but
we may have another place for you, because some of our volunteers feel just that way, that they really didn't feel that they were equipped to go into homes or to be with patients, but they help out in the hospice office. They do clerical things.
Yeah.
They do mailings.
Right.
So volunteers do lots of different things for hospice.
Friday from 8 to 12, huh?
You're at the hospital.
Yeah, I'm at the hospital. By admitting with the little podium and telling everybody hello and telling them where, you know, when they ask where to go. Biggest thing is, where's radiology? You know, I can tell them that in my sleep, you know. But how does one know it's time to get hospice support? I mean, let's just argumentatively say you've got, you know, cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're under a doctor's care and everything. And how does the person know it's time? Or do they
Well,
know?
Sometimes the physician will bring it up.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I think not often enough. But sometimes the physician will say if it's a cancer patient, now we've tried three different things. And this last one we tried, your scans aren't getting any better. We may not have any other options that are worth it, so it might be time to talk about focusing on comfort. So that's very, very wonderful thing when the physician takes that role. I think a lot of physicians are still almost afraid to have that conversation because... I think they either haven't been trained what words to use, and I think also in our culture, where the American culture is go fight, win, don't give up, and so it's a hard thing to say, I don't want to. This won't take away your hope, but it's time to hope for different things.
Right.
You were hoping for a cure. Let's hope for something different. Okay, so that's all from the physician point of view. I think, interestingly enough, no matter what the disease is, a heart disease, a lung disease, a brain disease, a cancer disease, the biggest factor in telling the patient, their family, and their doctor that time may be limited is how the person is functioning on a day-to-day basis. And if that person is now no longer to do anything except be either in the chair or the bed because they're so weak, they can't do the things they used to do.
Right.
And it's not because of something treatable on top of it, like they've got a bronchitis or something. But it's because of the underlying disease. When that, what we call how their functioning deteriorates, that is a more accurate way of telling that time is short than any lab test or x-ray or anything else.
You know, it's ironic because a few years back I had both my knees replaced, and I did a lot of research for doctors and such, and this one doctor, everybody said, you know, how great he was, you know, and such and such. The only negative thing was this woman said, he has no bedside manner. And I says, I'm not going to date him. We're not going to go out for a date.
Right.
I could care less.
Right. You wanted a good technician.
How is he a surgeon?
You wanted a technician.
Yeah. And he was a great surgeon. You know, I mean, and, you know, he came in after the next day and told me, you know, boom, you know, and you're going to go to rehab and, you know, yada, yada. But it wasn't like he's not going to ask you how your kids are or, you know, anything like that. And I don't care, you know what I mean?
Right. But you call it bedside manner or communication skills. That's really a key component of what palliative care practitioners do because, remember, as I said before, hospice is for the last 6 months or so.
Right.
Palliative care can be much earlier. As people get sicker with a chronic illness, their goals change. And it may not be a sudden change, like one day you're go, fight, win, and the next day you're like, okay, I'm ready for hospice. Usually it's more of an evolution, so that when someone's newly diagnosed with any serious illness, it may be, hey, I don't care how miserable I feel. I don't care if I'm suffering. Just hit me with whatever you got. I want to try to cure it. Their goal is to be cured. But as somebody goes through a chronic illness, you frequently get to the point where attempts at cure or even attempts at sort of keeping things in check come at a higher price. Now, sometimes the price is financial, but a lot of times it's financial. Yeah, but a higher price in terms of feeling miserable. Yeah, you can try this new drug or this new procedure. There's a 20% chance it'll help, and there's a 90% chance you're going to feel horrible. Then the question is, okay, given those facts, given that data, what are your goals? Are your goals still to be cured or to kind of buy as many days as you can? And a lot of people say, well, I'm not sure what my goal is now. I'm getting sick of going back and forth to the hospital. I would like to be comfortable and sit on my back porch and watch the birds at the bird feeder. So there's an evolution of what your goals are.
Right.
And so if the question is, do I go on hospice? Do I do this test? Do I do this new chemo? The first step is to take a step back and say, well, what are my goals here? What's important to me now, given my physical condition?
Right. And, you know, what can someone expect who starts palliative care?
It depends on, it's very, very variable. As I said earlier in this half hour, hospice benefit is a pretty well-defined package of services. You don't have to get everything. You know, some people say, oh, I don't want to see the chaplain, or I don't need a home health aide. But But usually toward the end of life, everybody needs most of that stuff. Palliative care is for earlier on, and so different people have different needs. There's an evaluation of all the needs done in the beginning. Some people, they're really not feeling psychologically or mentally stressed, or they're not having religious issues. They just have terrible pain,
right,
and they need
right.
pain control. So that person might see the physician or the nurse practitioner to get their pain medications adjusted.
Okay.
Other people may say, you know, I'm not really having any pain right now, but I'm really distressed and depressed and want to talk to somebody, and I think my spouse is too. And that person might see the social worker for counseling more than they see the doctor. They might see somebody from the team a couple times and then not need to see anybody for 6 months or a year and then come back again. So it's really a lot more flexible depending on the patient's needs.
And you mentioned family. What support for the families is it? Because if you have a loved one or a family member, regardless of it's you know parent or sibling or child or wife or husband, it's got to be very, very emotional and strenuous on the caretaker or spouse or whoever. So is there any kind of family
support? If somebody is connected with a palliative care team, our social worker, who's a very good counselor, Michelle Tafaro, she's meeting more with the family member than
the patient's
meeting with any of us. I should note, because this comes up sometimes, we do see some family members and the patient has an advanced dementia. And sometimes with palliative care, this is before hospice, what the family is really looking for is not just the supportive counseling for themselves, but they're looking for some practical help in the home,
right,
and hoping that by being on palliative care that they can avail themselves of more services than if they weren't going to palliative care. And unfortunately, we don't have like home health aides or volunteers the way hospice does.
Okay.
So that if somebody, we can talk about what other services they may not know about. For instance, Brightside is an adult daycare center.
Mm-hmm.
If they have somebody at home with advanced dementia, and we can tell them about that, but we can't put people in the home to do practical assistance. That's a limitation.
And it might be a stupid question, but why with hospice can they and you can't?
It's all about the insurance rules.
So
the insurance company, shall we call it, that sets the tone for the whole country is called CMS. They are the people that run Medicare and Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So back in, I think it was the early 80s, CMS decided, as I mentioned earlier, that Medicare would cover hospice, and they defined all these services that a hospice must provide.
Okay.
So that was terrific. And since then, most other insurance has followed suit. Medicare folks have not said that they have reimbursement in the same way for palliative care. If you see the palliative care doctor or nurse practitioner, that doctor or nurse practitioner can bill Medicare and get it covered.
Right.
But okay, we actually provide the supportive counseling and the chaplain services and even what's called Reiki, Alternative mm-hmm. Energy right. Services. We provide those free of charge. And I think it says something that Hunterdon Medical Center supports those people and allows us to provide the service without charging for right. it because insurance wouldn't pay for it.
Okay. Now, I know your programs treat like physical ailments. Do they treat emotional ailments also?
We do not provide that service because we're not... We feel that we are not the best people to do that.
Okay.
So we refer people to Hunterdon Behavioral Health or other
mm-hmm.
behavioral
okay.
health services for that.
Okay. In the last couple minutes, is there anything we didn't cover that you want us to cover?
Well, I suppose it would be a good idea to give contact information.
We can do that, yes.
And so for both these services, people should feel free to call with questions if you're not sure the service is appropriate or not, or what the service is, or how to access it. You can call with any questions. For Hunterdon Hospice, the phone number is 908-788-6600. So that's 788-6600. And for the palliative care program, it's 908-237-7018. 237-7018. And I should say that both those services can be accessed, or you can get more information about it from the Hunterdon Healthcare website.
Website, yeah. I have a quick question, though. You mentioned earlier that some of the patients not only have a physical illness, but they also like starting dementia or, you know. How is that treated then? You know, or isn't it? It's just part of the illness.
Well, I think it's if the patient themselves is developing memory problems
right.
or dementia. I'm actually glad you brought that up because one of the other things the palliative care people focus on is what we call advanced care planning. And that's the idea of thinking about your wishes for end-of-life care and thinking about who you would want to make medical decisions for you while you still are able
right.
to. So in other words, we help people fill out a living will.
Right. I was just going to say it's like a living will.
Decide who their, you could call them healthcare proxy or power of attorney for medical decisions is going to be. And then if need be, facilitate a conversation with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's amazing. Sometimes patients assume that everybody in their family is going to know what they want, and but they never talked about it or wrote it down. And then when that patient is not able to make decisions anymore, the family is very distraught.
It's, you know, it is. And, you know, it's something we all should do.
Absolutely. I have, in my family practice job, I see people for their yearly physical, and 50-year-old, 40-year-old will say, oh, I don't need a living will because I don't have any medical problems. I say, do you drive 31? Do you drive 78? Everybody should have one of these because you never know what's going to happen.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, you should. And because it, you know, it helps your family.
It's a gift to your family.
Right. You know, because you're telling them what you'd like while you're still cognizant enough to make those decisions.
Exactly.
You know? And, you know, like I know in my family situation, you know, my wife and my four kids, you know, and, you know, so you want them to know what, you know, so we do have living wills. And, you
oh,
know,
good.
Yeah, we do. I have them for a while. But, you know, so that...
Because what happens is like, to, so you're in a coma in the hospital, and two of the kids say, oh, keep going, Dad's a fighter. And the other two say, yeah. Dad would never want this.
Yeah. So now what do you do?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Without the living will, they sit and fight. You
right.
know? And,
or just get or very just, distressed.
Right.
Yeah.
Or... break up their relationship because, you know, they get ticked off at each other and that's the end of that and they don't talk for a couple of years. So rather than face that, you know, my wife and I both have living wills and, you know,
good.
And it's easier that way, you know. Mm-hmm. You might want to just give those phone numbers again.
Okay. Everybody got their pencil and
yeah,
paper?
There you go.
100 in Hospice, 908-788- 6600 and palliative care 908-237-7018.
Well, Dr. Bauman, I can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been very informative, and I really appreciate it. And I hope people out there have learned something, and for future use. Or current use if they
or
have to.
Or immediate use, yes.
Yeah. But I really appreciate you coming on. And
Well,
you know,
thank you for inviting me.
And I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did because it was very informative to me. And
I did.
We'll be here next week, same time, same station. And try to stay healthy, folks, okay? Take care.
Are you in business, not a member of the chamber? Come to the Hunterdon County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The Chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the Expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. The device that exploded at the Port Authority bus terminal frayed the nerves of hundreds of people who heard it.
I thought it was a bomb, yeah.
So as you hear the sound, you know, boom, the train stops or whatever. You hear people screaming and yelling and stuff like that.
I'm scared because I work right next to the building.
An MTA worker named Sean was nearby when the device was detonated.
It just went off. It exploded. Everybody around him just hit the ground. It knocked people down, and people got up, started running.
The suspect had some sort of low-tech device attached to his body when it went off, injuring himself and four other people. The people in the subway, including the suspect, are being treated for minor injuries, mostly headaches and ringing in the ears, and they are expected to be released sometime later today. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allyn Root. I'm a father of four, and I worry every day about this dangerous world. There are so many things that could go wrong. Economic collapse, stock market crash, terrorist attack, war with North Korea. There's a lot to worry about when it comes to protecting your income, assets, and your family's future. Thankfully, my good friends at Tangible Investments are your safe haven from the storm. Call now, and Tangible Investments will send you, absolutely free, a 1 ounce American Silver Eagle, along with your guide for investing in precious metals. To receive your free American Silver Eagle, call toll-free 800-780-9000. That's 800-780-9000.
This holiday season, give the gift of the paradigm, the ancient mystery of our times. From the renowned author of The Harbinger and The Book of Mysteries, Jonathan Cahn brings his latest New York Times bestseller, A Mystery from the Ancient Middle East, foretelling the events of our time in his most explosive book yet. Jonathan Cahn reveals the master blueprint that is now unfolding. The Paradigm, the ancient blueprint that holds the mystery of our times. Available wherever fine books are sold.
Russian troops may soon be leaving Syria, USA's Chris Barnes reports.
Russian President Vladimir Putin making an unannounced visit to that nation on Monday and meeting with Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad. While there, Putin issued an order to begin withdrawing the majority of Russian forces. It's the first time Putin's been to Syria since he sent those forces to help crush rebel groups opposed to Assad in 2015. Putin visiting an air base and telling the troops there they would be coming home as victors. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
A federal court says transgender people can enlist in the U.S. military starting January 1st. The ruling is a blow to President Trump's effort to ban transgender.